Well, now that you're warm and you're glad you got out of bed this morning, because freedom is coming. They can sing that when apartheid reigns in South Africa. We can sing that anytime, anywhere. Well, this morning I have a couple of brief readings for you. The first is a prose poem entitled The Life of a Day. And it's by Tom Hennen. The Life of a Day by Tom Hennen. Like people or dogs, each day is unique and has its own personality quirks, which can easily be seen if you look closely. But there are so few days as compared to people, not to mention dogs, that it would be surprising if a day were not 100 times more interesting than most people. But usually, they just pass, mostly unnoticed, unless they are wildly nice, like the autumn ones full of red maple trees and hazy sunlight, or if they are grimly awful ones, in a winter blizzard that kills the lost traveler and bunches of cattle. For some reason, we like to see days pass, even though most of us claim we don't want to reach our last one for a long time. We examine each day before us with barely a glance and say, no, this isn't one I've been looking for, and wait in a bored sort of way for the next, when we are convinced our lives will start for real. Meanwhile, this day is going by perfectly well adjusted, as some days are, with the right amounts of sunlight and shade and a light breeze scented with a perfume made from the mixture of fallen apples, corn stubble, dry oak leaves, and the faint odor of last night's meandering skunk. The second reading is an excerpt from an essay written by African-American writer June Jordan, who passed away after battling breast cancer in 2002. She writes a lot of very powerful poetry and essays, and this is a piece of an essay of hers that was entitled Waking Up in the Middle of Some American Dreams. Now, you'll notice Americans in the title, and I always get in trouble when I use American things. But I think what she says about the United States in this essay is something that you could apply more broadly to Western cultures that have a focus on individuality as opposed to a sort of more communal outlook on the way we live our lives. So this is her somewhat of an indictment of the American way of being. American delusions of individuality now disfigure our national landscape with multitudes of disconnected, pained human beings who pull down the shades on prolonged and needless agony. But if we would speak the unspeakable, if we would name and say the source of our sorrow and scars, we would find a tender and a powerful company of others struggling as we do. We would undertake collective political action founded on admitted similarities and grateful connections among us, otherwise needful citizens who now regard each other as burdensome or frightening or irrelevant. This would mean a great national coming out, a coming out of cars, a coming out of our deadpan passage through the streets of America, a coming out of our perverted enthusiasm for whatever keeps us apart. I worried about putting together these sentences I have written here from my heart. What was the point? And then I understood that the question was rather, do I care? And then I understood the answer is yes, yes, yes. I care because I have become aware of my absolute dependency upon you, whoever you are, for the quality and the outcome of my social, my democratic experience. A greater citizen. You've had one of those days, haven't you? Not just the kind the poet describes, the one you almost didn't notice you had, and not the one that was so trying that you could hardly wait to climb into bed to put it and you out of your misery. No, I'm talking about the kind of day that grabs you, that wakes you up and makes you reassess, the kind of day that sort of shakes you by the shoulders and gives you a new perspective and a new or renewed set of priorities. I had one of those days a few summers ago. As many of you know, we have gotten into the habit of spending part of our study leave time in Maine with Melora's parents. And on one of those days in Maine, I was at their home alone on this island, reading, I think, Annie Lamott at the time, trying to prepare sermons and ideas for the church year ahead. Everyone else was away, had taken the ferry over to the mainland to do grocery shopping and odds and ends, and they were expected back momentarily. There I was, seated alone, reading, listening to the ocean waves, just feeling peaceful and relaxed, when suddenly I heard a horrible sound, the screeching of tires, the sickening thud of metal against a tree, and I knew there had been a car crash on the road near the house. I put down my book. We still had dogs at the time, so I had the dog stay in the house, and I ran out toward the road to try to figure out what had happened. It flashed in my mind as I was running that it could be my family in that car, because I knew they were coming back any moment. What if, I thought as I ran, what if my wife, my daughter, my in-laws are in the car when I get there? I ran and found that there were already other people arrived helping. People had come off the public beach near their house, including a man who happened to be an EMT by profession, who were helping the two people who had been injured, who had indeed swerved off the road and hit a tree. They told me to run back to the house and bring water. I merely did what I was told in that moment. I came back with the water, and they told me they didn't need it anymore. They weren't sure if these folks should drink water because they might be in shock, they might have injuries internal that we couldn't see yet, so they wouldn't give them water yet. I was shaken, startled, scared out of what I had thought was just a normal everyday day, and moved by the efforts of people, good people, on their summer vacations to do what they could to help these people who I found out later were just fine. We are called, sometimes not nearly as dramatically as in that story, out of the immediate sphere of our individual lives and our family lives to be of service to the broader common good. This does not mean that we need to act heroically, but it does mean that we need to see a vision of our lives as being for more than just ourselves. The more I read what some sociologists are writing these days, It seems like that used to be easier to do. Robert Putnam, a sociologist at Harvard University, has written a book called Bowling Alone. Maybe some of you have heard of it. He talked about how back in the 50s and 60s, at earlier times, our society had a lot of civic organizations that brought people together. There was what he called a lot of social capital around in the world. People really relied on Elks clubs and Rotary clubs and bowling leagues, which is why he called his book Bowling Alone. They, I guess around here you'd have your curling groups and your lawn bowling groups. But we have become, Putnam and his sociologists worry, a more increasingly insular people. It's a sad commentary, it seems to me, on our contemporary culture that we seem to talk so much. You see people texting and on their cell phones all the time and typing away on their computers, blogging and such, and yet we seem to communicate so little for all that volume and all that noise. We have so few places now where we can go to truly meet one another, to connect with other people who are not kin or chosen friend, and we desperately need that. We need places like this church community where we can be reminded of our interconnectedness, where we can come to care for those who were once strangers to us. I'm amazed in our new world order, our global community, how we can feel kinship with those across the globe. We can witness with horror natural disasters in Haiti and in Japan. We can see human rights abused and demanded anew amidst the Arab Spring. All of this can make us feel more keenly a part of the human family. That being human at this moment in human history has its common strivings and hardships, its common desires for peace and freedom. We can feel that we want to do our part to have all people have the same and enjoy the same freedoms and peace, the potential for a life well lived, defined on their own terms. The world has never in many ways felt more closer, felt more within reach, even if it occasionally also feels simultaneously so remote, so different from our own experience. How many of us sort of relate to what's going on when we read the newspaper or we hear what's going on in Syria or other places around the world and marvel at how different it is from our day in and day out living? We seem to be drawn in more and more to a more expansive view of what it means to be a citizen. Not merely a resident of a particular place, but a person who is part of a larger set of connections. I think we want to be much more than the dictionary definition of a citizen, which is a legally recognized subject. We can feel and sense that we are the authors of lives that can stretch rather than shrink. I want to share with you a poem about a remarkable story. There's a poet, a Palestinian-American poet by the name of Naomi Shihab Nye, who wrote a poem about Paul Robeson. I don't know how many of you know about Paul Robeson. How many of you have heard of Paul Robeson or have heard his booming, sonorous bass voice? Old Man River, right? Paul Robeson was this remarkable man. If you don't know a lot about him, Google him, because here was this man, huge athlete, went to Rutgers University, played football, and he sang like a dream. And he had political views that were not in alignment with his time. He believed he was actually sort of a communist, and the U.S. government was not so happy about this. Okay? And he was saying and speaking up in outright ways about the civil rights violations of his country. And the U.S. government got so angry with him that they pulled his passport. They revoked it for a number of years, and he was not allowed to leave the United States because they figured, well, at least he's just stirring the pot here. He's not traveling in Europe and singing. We'll just keep him here. So because of his activism, they revoked his passport. And so he decided that he was just going to thumb his nose at that, and he did a concert. Have you heard about this? In May of 1952, Paul Robeson stood on the back of a flatbed pickup truck at the Peace Arch, not so far from here, at the border between British Columbia and Washington State, and he sang. While he was in the United States, he sang into Canada. And he, we are told, sang to about 20,000 to 40,000 people, depending on who you hear. And it happened, and it was so beautiful that he came back and he did it several more times. Well, the poet Naomi Shihab Nye has written a poem about Paul Robeson doing that concert on the border. And it's a poem entitled Cross That Line, which is what I'm talking about this morning, about crossing lines, becoming a greater citizen. And here's what the poem says. Paul Robeson stood on the northern border of the USA and sang into Canada, where a vast audience sat on folding chairs waiting to hear him. He sang into Canada, his voice left the USA when his body was not allowed to cross that line. Remind us again, brave friend, what countries may we sing into? What lines should we all be crossing? What songs travel toward us from far away to deepen our days? I don't know about you, but every so often I feel like we get pulled into a nationalistic way of seeing things. I noticed it here during the Canadian elections, and I noticed it every time I was in the U.S. during election season, that I was asked to think about myself as an American. Here you get asked to think of yourselves once again as a Canadian. And sometimes when I hear a Canadian, it seems like it's a term that's so broad and simultaneously so specific that I'm not sure I know what it means anymore. What is a national identity in 2012 look like? Perhaps I've been too lazy, I worry, and allowed others to interpret it for me, to tell me what it means. Maybe others have told you this is what it's like to be a Canadian and you should act accordingly. You should say thank you and please all the time. right? Sorry about that. Or sometimes I worry that these nationalistic words and identities are just shorthand, that we use them for shorthand for something that needs much more explanation than a half-hearted attempt. So what does it mean to be a Canadian? Are there values that are intrinsic to being Canadian? What sense of self or identity is wrapped up in your national identity? And what might it mean to think of citizenship as having layers and levels? What does it mean to be a good citizen of your family? To be a good citizen of your neighborhood? To be a good citizen of this nation? To be a good citizen of the world? Answering these questions really comes down to answering the question, who do I want to be beyond my own front door? Who do I want to be in the world? Who am I called to be in order to do my part to help create the greatest good? It means discerning what the responsibilities and the requirements for living alongside others will be. In the U.S., and I will take up June Jordan's criticism of the United States now, It seems to me that we like to focus on the gifts and the rights that come with citizenship. I get to own things. I get to vote. I get to have freedom. I get to have privacy. And too often in the United States, people stop there, content to simply list and defend those aspects of being a citizen which suit our ends and our desires. This is what I can do, and this is what I want, and it is my right. We don't look further at what is asked of us in return. We don't look at the responsibilities and obligations that come with those rights. What are we willing to do to secure those rights for others? To treat others with a core sense of respect and to see and to understand clearly that focus on our individual need is not enough. Or to see that I should look for places where what I think might be best could be aligned with the greater good. Friends, we will need to cross lines and cross borders more regularly. Immigration and inclusion, of course, have become very volatile questions ever since September 2001, if not before that. Who's in and who's out and what it takes to be included in the liberties and advantages of cultures and societies like Canada and the United States have become a battleground. This means that the call is all the stronger for us to own and to see the welfare of others as not merely optional, but as central to our common humanity. Did you hear what June Jordan said so strongly? Or were you taken aback by her talking about America so much? She said, "We would undertake collective political action founded on admitted similarities and grateful connections among us. Otherwise, needful citizens who now regard each other as burdensome or frightening or irrelevant." I read that again this week and I almost fell out of my chair. Because I feel like so many of the political debates of our time are saying exactly that. Oh, we don't want to pay more money to help people who need more health care. People are a burden to us. Or they're frightening. Oh, those Muslim people, they're fundamental, they're extreme. Yeah. Or they're just irrelevant. I don't care what other people want. I don't care what other people need. I'm just looking out for number one. And she said so beautifully at the end that I worried about putting this together because who cares? Nobody will care that I wrote this stuff. And then she said, but I understand now that I have to write this down. Yes, yes, yes. Why? Because I have become aware of my absolute dependency upon you, whoever you are. For my social, she says, my social and my democratic experience. We need each other. We're all wrapped up in this world together. Whether we know that we need each other or not is no longer the question. Asked and answered, as they would say in a court, asked and answered, we are in this together. So we can either behave like it or continue to bury our heads in the sand and act like it's not true. So to do this, we have to see citizenship in its broadest possible terms. What does it mean to be alive in this time on this planet? Each fallible and capable of remarkable love, can we work to see it in all people, that this love and this fallibility, this beauty, this connection, this possibility of being citizens of a global community? To embrace the challenge of offering equal citizenship to all. What would that look like for you? At work, on the street, in listening to those who disagree with you. And I think again and close with that image of Paul Robeson singing at the border. Remind us again, brave friend, what countries may we sing into? What lines should we all be crossing? And what songs travel toward us from far away to deepen our days? So may it be. And amen.